Hey, welcome to episode number 7 of the First Responder Wellness Podcast, the show where we talk about wellness, mental health, leadership, and what it takes to have a culture of wellness within your organization. My name is Conrad Weaver, and I'm not a first responder, but I've worked with first responders from all across the country for my film, PTSD 911. My guest today is Sherry Martin. Sherry serves as the National Director of Wellness Services for the Fraternal Order of Police. She is a career police officer who has extensive experience in crisis negotiation and intervention, serving most of her law enforcement career as a patrol supervisor and lead crisis negotiator. Sherry has a number of degrees, including a Master of Arts degree in clinical counseling psychology. And in 2020, Sherry led the Fraternal Order of Police National Officer Wellness Committee in a landmark survey of police officers on the subjects of critical stress, stigma, and the use of wellness services. She is a published author and a frequent presenter on officer wellness and police suicide. I'm really honored to have her on the show today. Sherry was also a key to getting the National FOP Wellness Services on as a sponsor of the PTSD 911 documentary. And for that, I'm very grateful. Hey, I really appreciate you listening to this podcast. And if you think others would too, please subscribe and share this episode. And if you're interested in sponsoring the show, please send me an email and let me know about your company or organization. We're looking for sponsors who are passionate about the wellness of first responders. And if that's you, I'd love to talk with you and how you can help. Thanks again for listening. And now here's my interview with Sherry Martin. Well, Sherry, welcome to the First Responder Wellness Podcast. It's good to have you on board.
Thanks, Conrad. Glad to be here.
Yeah. So what have you been doing with yourself over the summer? You had nothing to do, I'm sure.
Busy, busy, busy time all the time for FOP wellness.
Yeah. So let's go back. I want to hear a little bit about just the cliff notes of how you got involved in public safety.
Absolutely. So I'm a retired law enforcement officer. I did not intend to become a police officer. That wasn't what I planned to do with my life. You know, and I think, you know, some people spend their whole life going, oh, I always wanted to be a police officer. That was not me. I got into law enforcement, not quite by accident, but kind of because I was tired of going to school. And I said, you know, when I was in college, I was an intern at a police department. I was interested in forensic science. Like I think a lot of us started out in the silence of the lamb, Clarice Starling days. And so I said, you know what? I don't feel like going to pursue a master's degree at this point. I think I'll get a job. And so I became a police officer. Once I became one, I was like, you know what? This is not an unfun job. This is kind of a fun job. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a very short attention span sometimes. And so the challenges of having something different every single day was really cool for me. I eventually did go back to school, though, and get a degree in counseling, which is, you know, kind of another part of the story. But I spent 23 years in law enforcement, worked my way up to the rank of lieutenant, married a policeman from another state, moved to that state and went back to the bottom again and served out 23 years in law enforcement before I retired from active service in 2019 and became the National Director of Wellness Services for the Fraternal Order of Police.
Yeah. So how did that transition happen, not only for you, but for the FOP? What was the thing that help them develop this this part of the FOP?
Exciting time for us then, at least for me. And I think a lot of our members too. And you know, what happened is our organization is entirely member driven. We have active and retired police officers that do the work of the 40 committees that are within the National Fraternal Order of Police. And we work on everything from pensions to border security, anything that affects the life of a police officer. So at that time, officer wellness was a committee, one of 40 that we had inside the FOP. I was serving on that committee as a volunteer while I was still an active police officer. And we had an opportunity to do some survey research. NBC, New York City, approached us and said, we have done a survey with firemen across the country. We want to do a story about the human impact of doing the work of a first responder. So they came to the FOP because we were the largest organization of law enforcement in the country. And we said, okay, you know, we'll jump on this because we wanted to know within the FOP, where we stood with officer mental health and wellness and what services were out there, what officers were thinking about the services that were out there available to them, you know, and as active police officers working inside the FOP, like we had our own ideas and instincts already. Certainly I had with 20 some years of experience as an officer, how officers were thinking about mental health and what they were feeling about it. But we wanted to get that on paper and data. So we did that survey. Tremendous. That was the game changer.
Because what were some of the big things that kind of stood out to you guys as you did the survey?
90% of cops believe there was a stigma against asking for help. Mm. That was probably the biggest thing. Other things we learned, some of the things that were keeping people from accessing those services, things you would think of like concerns about confidentiality, being seen as weak or unfit for duty. But other things like being worried that the clinician wouldn't understand law enforcement culture.
Because that's a real problem.
Sure is. Yeah. I think we're, you know, and I'm sure we'll talk about this in the podcast, but we're trying to improve that situation. You know, another big thing we learned is that peer support was the go-to. And back then, that survey was in 2018. Back then, peer support was a lot less popular. It just wasn't as common. I won't say it wasn't.
And that was pre-COVID as well and all the pre-COVID stuff that brought. Yeah.
And I mean, and back then, a lot of first responders didn't have peer support available to them. It was mostly EAPs and, you know, formal clinical programs that were available. And so, but the officers that did have access to peer support told us, yeah, that's what we want. That's where it's
at. Did you see an uptick after COVID or coming through COVID? Was there more involvement in peer support after that?
Absolutely. I think it's not only COVID. COVID, I think, certainly was a driver. Mm-hmm. But lots of things kind of happened, I think, all at once in the law enforcement world. That drove peer support to be, you know, as popular as it is now. Mm-hmm. One of those things, too, was the federal government, the Department of Justice Cops Office and other facets of the Department of Justice started to fund programs for mental health, for law enforcement. And so those grants provided an opportunity for a lot of agencies to build their wellness programs, including peer support teams. We started to talk more about how much officers wanted peer support. That national survey and the reach of the FOP kind of, I think, really bolstered the reach of peer support programs and, you know, kind of drove home that that's what we needed to be doing, because if we are going to try to get our first responders to use services, we need to give them what they want, right? Mm-hmm. And if they're telling us they want peer support, that's what we need to do.
So prior to you coming on board, this was kind of run by a committee of volunteers. So now the FOP said, hey, we believe in this so much, we want to invest some dollars into this. And so they brought you on board. I don't know if you have a staff or not, but at least that there's some money being involved, because this is an important thing.
Yeah. And so, yeah, the other half of that story is that the response to the survey was unprecedented, which told us that our members really wanted to talk about mental health. They really wanted something to be done. They wanted us to focus on this, not only as an organization, but as an entire profession. And put some resources behind it. We had a division of labor services, we had a legislative division, and then our leadership said, all right, this is important to our members. We're going to have a division of wellness services. And so, now there's a lot more money invested, resources invested, time invested. That's my full-time job now. I have a committee still. There is still a wellness committee. There are 8 active and retired members of the FOP who have backgrounds in peer support, crisis intervention, hostage negotiation, 8 tremendous folks who work with me to do the work that we do in the Division of Wellness Services. Mm-hmm.
So in the past years, since the survey came out, since you came on board, how has the conversation around wellness changed or shifted within law enforcement?
I think for one, if I had to say one thing in particular, it's gotten a lot more common. We That's talk a lot more. Yes, it is. Because it breaks down that stigma, right? Mm-hmm. The more we talk about it, the more normal it seems, the less stigma is attached, the easier it is for people to overcome those fears about being judged or seen as weak if they do access services. I mean, heck, there's a lot of time and money and effort and other resources being spent now to develop these services. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure people can get to them and use them and feel comfortable doing that. And so, yeah, it's absolutely a fantastic thing that we talk about it. I think that, you know, our goal is to make sure that wellness and talking about wellness and mental health is part of a first responder's career from day one, from, you know, all the way from the day they're hired all the way through to retirement.
Yeah.
That's a big one.
Just on that note, when we were in Des Moines, Iowa on our bike tour, we did a screening there and the chief of police there was on the panel. He's a fantastic guy, fantastic agency, just really on top of wellness and, you know, really, really focusing on this. And he came up on the panel and he said two things. First of all, I wish every one of my cadets were in the front row of this movie, you know, sitting here watching this.
Awesome.
He said, second, I know we need to do a lot more at the academy when it comes to wellness. So I think that conversation is starting to happen.
Yeah, it is. We've seen just across the country, you know, in our travels, that a lot more of that is being done, where more classes, even if they're not devoting an entire section of their curriculum in the academy to wellness, we're seeing those. Whereas before, there might not have even been one class on wellness and taking care of yourself through the career. And now we're seeing that more and more commonly, which is awesome.
Yeah. It's like one guy told me, you know, back in his days, you know, he was a firefighter, but back in like the 50s, it was like, you know, our introduction to wellness was suck it up. Here's a beer. You know?
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, and it's been fun for me because I've kind of straddled those generations. I mean, I came into the profession when we still didn't really talk much about it, and seen it come all the way around.
So, what are you guys doing as the FOP to help kind of, you know, play a role in pushing that momentum toward these goals?
Yeah, so we have developed a number of programs and initiatives with inside the Division of Wellness Services to reach out and to continue to expand services and to fill in the gaps, if you will, of where we thought maybe services were lacking or officers were reluctant to use services that were already available, and kind of encourage those outside of the FOP to develop similar systems. And there's, you know, when I talk about this, I talk about are kind of our wheel of wellness, and there's different spokes on the wheel. Each one is one of the things that we've developed. And so I'll kind of just, you know, go through those one by one, and we can chat about those a little bit. I think maybe the one to start with is one of the things we talked about already is that one source of stigma being a concern that the provider won't understand law enforcement culture.
Right.
So, you know, that stems from hearing horror stories about first responders who had actually taken the step to go see a mental health provider, only to have that mental health provider say something to them that was off-putting, and gave a clear indication that the clinician did not understand at all the nature of their work. And you know, sometimes, as you well know, taking that first step to get a first responder in to see a professional is a huge one. And if it goes wrong, they may never come back.
It's going to close the door, you know? Yeah.
Just close that door. Right. So we said, all right, we need to identify, because we knew they were out there, those wellness providers and programs who are practiced at working with first responders, who are what we call culturally competent, who understand law enforcement culture. Even, you know, some of them are former law enforcement themselves. And we're talking about individual therapists, psychologists. We're talking about residential treatment programs for those who need that level of care. We're talking about wellness training programs. We're talking about crisis hotlines that are geared specifically to first responders. What we do in the FOP is we vet those resources. We find them, we vet them. And then we've started to catalog them in what we call the FOP Approved Provider Bulletin. That's a website that's a page right off of our FOP.net website, where an officer, a spouse, a department head, anyone can go look at the list of resources that we have already vetted there, and hopefully find themselves a resource if they're looking for some care. Mm-hmm.
Are you aware of what the state of Utah, I think, is doing in regard to they're pushing something through the legislation to provide resources to pay for officers, firefighters who want to go into the mental health field?
Oh, I did not know that. That's exciting.
They're going to pay for that postgraduate work or graduate work. And so
that's very exciting.
It's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, wow. That's cool. I'm going to be in Utah, in a couple of months, actually. So I'm going to see what I can learn about that and see if maybe I can gather some.
Yeah. I was talking to someone about that. I forget what the name of the congressman or the state rep that's kind of pushing that, but yeah, it's a whole initiative that they're working on too within the state there. If you're a first responder and you're getting ready to retire, or if you're just wanting a career shift, but you want to go into mental health, here's the money to go do that.
Super exciting.
Yeah.
That is awesome. Yeah. You know, and you bring up a good point there with that. And Utah has probably realized this, that there does seem to be a shortage of wellness providers that, right, you know, work specifically with first responders. What we have found, though, there are a lot of people who want to do that work. Mm. Who genuinely come from a place of wanting to help, you know, the helpers, and you know, what they don't know, they want to learn. Mm-hmm. And so there's a push too for us to, you know, educate those people who have the desire, mm-hmm, to do that kind of specialized and nuanced work. And so I think you're going to see all those things, yeah, happen.
What if there's a mental health worker watching this or listening to this, and they want to have a curiosity for this, what should they do? What's the first step that they can do to kind of get to that place?
That's a great question. So there's a few things, right? One, get to know their local first responders. Mm. You know, reach out to the local police department, fire department, and, you know, EMS department, whatever it is. Go on a ride along, mm-hmm, or two or three or seven, yeah. and really see and immerse themselves in the work that these folks do. Another thing I would say is there's some training programs out there online for first responder clinicians, you know, to learn more about what the culture is like, investigate some of those. We in the FOP provide an event every year for providers. It's called the Wellness Professionals Forum. And we invite providers who are interested in who are already working with first responders to come and learn from others who are doing that work. And so, yeah, there's lots of opportunities out there, if they just look for them.
Yeah. So what are some of those other spokes in the wheel that you guys have?
So I think the other big one that we're super excited about because of where we are right now with it is, we have developed a new peer support curriculum for law enforcement. So, we looked around after we learned that peer support was kind of the go-to for law enforcement officers. We looked around and said, all right, we want to try to create regional teams in the FOP of peer supporters because we're nationwide. We thought, all right, it would be cool if, you know, when we have an incident happen, we can send a team of peer supporters. So we looked at training and we thought, all right, well, we need to find those peer supporters that are trained. And then we found that there were a gazillion different models of peer support training. So we said, all right, we need some standardization here. We were lucky enough to be awarded a federal grant by the COPS Office of the Department of Justice to write a brand new national standard curriculum in peer support. It's called Power in Peers. We are doing the first pilot of the Power in Peers course, in November. Hmm. And actually I'm lying, December, second week of December, we're doing that. Super excited about finally seeing this come to fruition. It was a 3-year process to research and construct this curriculum. And now we're finally going to be teaching folks how to become supporting peer mentors, and to train others to be supporting peer mentors.
That's awesome, because it's more than just knowing, you know, listening to your fellow officer tell their thing. You got to know what to do when they present something like, oh, that's heavy. You got to know where to go, what to do, right?
Oh, yeah. And so, you know, the cool thing about this is there's a couple of things, actually, there's a few things in this course that, you know, some of the things will be things that people have seen in peer support courses, mm-hmm, before. We teach about responding to crises. We teach about active listening skills. But there's a self-care element in this course that teaches the supporting peer mentor to make sure that they're taking care of themselves. There's a part of it that teaches them how to recognize, work with a peer that's out of their scope. Peer support is not clinical work. And so we teach them how to work with their peer to find a higher level of care or service, should that be necessary. We talk about aftercare. We talk about following up with that peer after they have been gone to a higher level of service and continuing to walk the walk with them. And through all of that, working with their personal strengths to help them learn how to get back on their feet themselves, you know, lean on that peer, but use their own strengths to improve their own confidence and know that they can get through tough things.
Mm-hmm. You know, I know there's peer support for like the rank and file, but the further up you go in the food chain, the smaller that group gets.
You bet.
Is there peer support for, you know, lieutenants or captains or chiefs?
Yeah, you know, that's one thing we're seeing also come up more and more is mental health support for those higher ranks, which is important, right?
Sure, absolutely.
And it's important not only for their care, but also they're the example.
Right.
So, you know, we have to be able to support all levels. The Power in Peers course is designed for any police officer, any person that works in a law enforcement agency, civilians also are included, all ranks, all levels, and retirees. So we're going to bring some of our retirees in to get trained as well, because they're a tremendous resource for us.
And I'm sure they also carry a lot of other things that if you're working, you don't carry that. You carry those maybe regrets, maybe those, you know, you're looking back with longing perhaps at the job and you don't know what to do. Maybe you don't have purpose. You don't have something that you're actively going in. And so there's a whole different set of challenges there for the retirees.
Yeah. Double bonus though, you know, for the law enforcement profession, I think the Power in Peers course is going to be a great resource, not only for retirees who might need support, but also for retirees to give back. Those who become supporting peer mentors, exciting time.
Yeah, that's awesome. What else are you working on?
So all of the things that we have built have been built on research that we've done with the members. I mentioned that 2018 survey. We took the things that we learned from that survey, and that's how we built Power in Peers, and that's how we built the Approved Provider Bulletin. And so we kind of scratched our heads after that and said, you know what, there's really something to this surveying people thing, and doing what they're telling us they need. So in 2021, we decided that we would continue to survey members of law enforcement on a regular basis. And we instituted what is going to be now a biennial survey. So we are going to keep, in 2021, we measured 35 variables. And it was everything from what stresses cops out to levels of suicidality, levels of burnout and psychological distress. But we also asked about current things that were happening then in law enforcement, like the protests following the death of George Floyd, how officers felt that their relationships with the community were going, and other things that were kind of affecting, you know, in a indirect way, officer health and well-being. And so we found some very significant things from those findings of that survey, have published a number of papers that talk about what we found in that survey. Things like the number one source of stress among 60 different things that stress cops out in 2021, the number one stressor was staff shortages, over and above having a colleague killed in the line of duty. I mean, that's significant.
Sure.
Yeah. Sure. Unbelievable. You know, things like 65% of cops are worried that they were going to be fired or arrested or sued for doing their job. And that, because that's just kind of the environment that we were in 2021. So the 2023 survey opened just a few weeks ago. It's open to active and retired law enforcement officers. It'll be open until November 1. So if you're out there listening to this podcast in October and you know you want to get in on this survey, it's an anonymous survey. It takes about 20 minutes to complete. And you know, some things, Conrad, we track over time. We're going to continue to track which wellness services people are using because we want to make sure we're on the right track. We're going to continue to track levels of suicidality and burnout so that we can, you know, share that information with those who are trying to help. But we're also in this survey talking a lot about retention and how officers feel that their agents, it's huge right now. We want to know how officers feel that their agencies are treating them and which things are making them think about leaving the job because we need to retain people.
I know I was talking to my neighbor who's a corporal with our local sheriff's department, and he said there's a whole bunch of leaders within the agency who are retiring this year. And he said, we're short-staffed already. And so there's going to be people moving up into those positions and we're going to be even more short-staffed, you know?
Oh yeah.
And so
it's been tough for everyone across the country. You know, not only are people retiring, for various reasons, and we've kind of heard all the reasons of, you know, why people are retiring and they're varied. But recruiting is tough too. You know, it's been the last 2 years have been tough for law enforcement and, you know, really public service in general. I heard a news story, I think yesterday, that all public service hiring is down. You know, and that's, again, a number of things behind that, from levels of pay to, you know, COVID changed a lot about, you know, work metrics and having to report for duty versus being able to work from, you know, from home. And it, you know, just it changes a lot of things for those professions.
Yeah, my wife's a leader in education. She's an administrator, and they've been decimated with just people quitting and just, you know, filling. And they had a teacher, the first, a second day of school, turned in her notice.
Wow.
Like what?
Wow. Yeah. What do you do? Right.
You couldn't have just done this, you know, before school started and giving us a heads up, you know? No, we're already in the school year and okay, I'm quitting, you know?
Yeah. Wow. Wow. Yeah.
So
tough, you know, and teachers have it tough too. I was talking with someone the other day about, you know, what for us, one of the big impetuses behind the survey is, you know, we feel like in a way, academia, the media, all these outside influences have been trying to tell law enforcement how they should be doing the job for a few years now. Mm-hmm. And it's rare that law enforcement gets to speak up for themselves and say, okay, that's nice that you think that we should improve this or change that or do that. But do you really know what it's like to be doing the job if you haven't done it? And so for us, the survey gives officers a chance to speak up about what it's really like, because again, it's anonymous. I mean, and I think far too often, you know, like I want to go on a social media rant sometimes about the things that I see, you know, and how can anyone think we don't need law enforcement? But, you know, a lot of officers are not in a position to do that. Their departments won't allow them to, you know, post opinions on social media. And so I think some of them feel that they don't have a voice. And for us, you know, not only for us to learn about what their needs are as far as mental health and taking care of them, but to give them an opportunity to be heard as well. And so I said to someone the other day, you know, we're often told in law enforcement how to do our jobs. I think the only other profession where people are told how to do their job so much from outside the profession is teachers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Teachers are also constantly told by other people how to do their job.
By the parents.
Yes. Yes. So, yeah, I empathize.
And by some politicians every once in a while.
Yes. I empathize there. So, yeah. Yeah. So, you know, and I guess probably the other big spoke in our wellness wheel is our Wellness Professionals Forum and our Wellness Summit. Every year in February, we hold a 2-day wellness training event that is geared toward law enforcement. We invite spouses and partners to join us as well. And some do. And then we have that Wellness Professionals Forum that I mentioned. Wellness professionals can also attend the Wellness Summit. And we hold 2 full days of training seminars that are all related to different parts of wellness. We try to get everything in there. We get a little financial wellness, little family wellness, a little spiritual wellness. We even offer, I'll say optional physical fitness activities that we guide. And we do get good participation in those. You know, we do an organized walk. We have some yoga and some meditation and some other things.
And you even show documentaries once in a while.
We even show documentaries. Yes, we had PTSD 911 at our summit last year. Tremendous addition to our program.
Thank you for that.
Yes, we loved having you there, and really great feedback from the attendees at the summit about the film. It really kind of tied everything together for people. You know, we spend all day in a seminar or various seminars, but then, you know, coming together as a group to watch that film and everyone's reactions to it really added something to the summit. So thank you.
Thank you. Well, it'd be interesting to see in the survey how the attitudes toward wellness have shifted from your first survey. You know, as the years go on, it'd be interesting to see that.
Yeah. And that's why. So another thing that we talk about a little more as we go through these surveys is stigma. And we're going to try to measure those perceptions of stigma as we go through. One thing we've been able to tell, which is pretty cool from the 2021 survey, is we looked at which wellness services first responders were using, specifically police officers were using. You know, what was available to them? One, two, what were they using? And three, what did they find effective? And we're on the right track. They still say peer support's where it's at. Even if it's not available to them, that's what they think is most effective. But here's the cool thing. The more wellness services that an agency provides, so, you know, providing more than just EAP, providing peer support, chaplaincy services, you know, other training and wellness, heck, a financial, whatever. The more wellness services an agency provides, the lower the stigma around wellness services and the less psychological distress their personnel show. And we can tell that by comparing those metrics amongst respondents to the survey. So coincidence, I think not, you know, because what happens is if an agency checks, if an agency provides one wellness service, it checks a box and okay, we've checked that box. But if an agency provides four or five or six or seven different wellness services, and some agencies are providing 10 or more, then it creates a culture of wellness in that agency. It lets the workers know that, hey, they're providing all these things. They must really care about my well-being and my family's well-being. And then that starts to change things.
It goes back to what Todd Jerry says, as it's a buffet of options that they offered in Garland.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And who doesn't like to go eat at a buffet, right? You can pick and choose what you want.
Lots of choices. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah. You know, another big one, Conrad, and I think this is a street we're going to go down now, is family wellness, bringing the families in.
That's so important.
So very important. And that kind of was something that we found in one of our prior surveys, is that during COVID, we did a little mini survey to kind of try to find out how COVID was affecting people. And one huge takeaway from that is that the officers' biggest concern was their families. Was worried that they were going to bring COVID home to their families. You know, over and above their own safety, they were worried about their families. And it kind of, you know, it sheds light on the fact that families are often our biggest concern, our biggest worry, and our biggest source of support. And so that's an untapped resource as well. You know, it's one thing for an agency to realize that, hell yeah, we probably ought to also take care of their family. But agencies are a huge source of support. And if we're trying to support our employees, ooh, that's another place we can look.
Yeah. It just reduces the stress for that officer, right? To know that they have support for the family. And something that Todd talked about, and if you haven't heard the first episode of this podcast, go back and listen to Todd Jerry. He talks about how the results of all these things, it's going to take some time. It's going to take some time to see the results of it. But what you might find is people aren't calling in sick as much. There's not as many, what's it called when they, I don't know, all I can think is beat down somebody, but that is showing a use of force or
excessive force. Yeah.
So there's less of that because you're taking better care of yourself.
Yeah. Reducing stress, reducing anger, reducing fatigue. Mm-hmm. Fatigue's another big one. That was another big source of stress we found in the surveys is fatigue. And, you know, if you think about that, I know we talk all the time about sleep and how important sleep mm-hmm. is. And sleep and fatigue are two different things, but related. And just the kind of different mindset that all human beings are in when they don't get adequate rest, mm-hmm. you know, and rest, including time off from work.
Yeah.
To keep a work-life balance and be able to spend time decompressing and doing things they want.
And what about, so I had a friend who's in law enforcement and he talked about how they are still doing the swing shift thing where he's every 3 weeks he's on a different shift and it totally screws up his sleep cycles.
And they're done that. Yep.
Yep. And so, you know, what can someone do who's like, you know, just an officer on the street and they're like, why can't we have permanent shifts or why can't we do something different here than, you know, I'm on days 1 week and I'm on evenings the next and on nights the next and I'm totally screwed up every week.
Yeah. Yeah. And to that, Conrad, I'd say a couple things. I mean, number one, obviously, try to influence your administration to make changes. Do some research, find the science mm-hmm. and present it. And, you know, if you have that opportunity to let them know what science is about the swing shifts and what that does to a person's well-being. Those shifts are tough. Been there, done that, worked many more midnights than I'd like to recall. And, you know, but sometimes there's not always the opportunity to make changes or to have any influence to make changes. So if that's the case, I say, give yourself a break, become aware, yourself of what those shifts can do if you don't pay attention and, you know, make extra plans, take extra steps to do what you have to do to take care of yourself, mentally, physically, emotionally, all of it.
Because ultimately it comes down to every person is also responsible for themselves, right?
Of course.
To take care of themselves. And that's something that I'm learning just in my journey over the last couple of years. I've become much more aware of where I am and what I'm doing, what I'm involved in and how that affects me and how it affects the people around me.
Yeah. You know, I mean, and I think it's a challenge for most of us mm-hmm. to do that, you know, and I think specifically sometimes those in first responder professions, because we're used to worrying about and taking care of everyone else. I'm in the same boat. I have to make myself take time to do the things that matter, right? Not that our work doesn't matter, but at the end of the day, or at the end of our lives, rather, it's not going to be our work that takes care of us and sustains us. It's going to be those we love, in our own health. So it's absolutely important. And, you know, and I think what happens often is we feel bad if we step away from work. Mm-hmm. Because I need to keep at it. I need to, but you know, it's the old oxygen mask adage. You can't help others if you haven't put
your own mask on. It's the little thing of like just turning off notifications on your phone.
Yes. You know?
Exactly. Exactly. And sometimes my wife and I have these conversations because, you know, she's a school administrator. So she's in these group chats with other administrators in her school. And, you know, and it's Saturday and it's her phone's going off. I'm like, really? You can't turn that off for the weekend, you know? And sometimes she can't, as there's a reason, but other times, you know, And I'm the same way. I need to turn mine off, you know, from when I got things going on. I think that's because being present is so important.
Absolutely. Well, you know, and you've just hit another nail in the head there, holding each other accountable. Mm-hmm. You know, having people around you that will hold you mm-hmm. accountable. My husband recently promoted, and so he's super excited mm-hmm. about work again and wants to constantly, you know, be looking at the phone. And I've said, all right, this is date night. Mm-hmm. I don't have my phone. Put yours down just for today.
It's so important, so vital. So Is there any kind of meaningful legislation that's in process, that's in the works, that makes wellness a bigger part of funding for agencies? Because I know that's often a challenge for agencies to have the funding in place to be able to provide some of these resources.
Yeah. That's a very good point. You know, what's interesting, Conrad, is that legislatively, there's a couple of issues that we look at in the FOP that are related to mental health. One is whether or not the state has PTSD under their workman's comp coverage for first responders.
Are there still states that don't have that?
There are. Yes, there are. It's kind of all over the map. You know, we have seen more and more states have that, but there are still some that don't. And the argument is usually about money. It's usually, you know, a worry that too many folks will take advantage. But honestly, a PTSD diagnosis is a tough one to get. I mean, there's a lot of elements to a PTSD diagnosis. So it seems silly to me to think that people would take advantage. But anyway, that's the argument. I think we're going to get there one day. You know, the other thing that we look at a lot is peer support, confidentiality for peer support. And more and more states are realizing and recognizing that there needs to be confidentiality maintained between peer supporters, just like it is between clinicians and their clients, because without that confidentiality, there's still going to be a reluctance to use that service. And we need to remove every barrier we can that would keep someone from accessing services. So we, you know, we kind of track those and where states are and kind of try to help those states along that don't have those protections. But, you know, there are other things exciting that are happening from state to state. So, for example, you mentioned, you know, that effort in Utah, which I did not know about. Arizona has a law that provides a certain number of sessions with a clinician to their folks as a matter of course, paid for under an act that's adopted into law. Very exciting. I mean, and that's, you know, I would love to see other states follow suit where, you know, this is a benefit that's already provided to our first responders that they don't have to worry about the cost. It's kind of, you know, built in just like anything else.
Sure. Yeah, that should be, I mean, it should be just a given that because we want healthy first responders in our communities.
Yes, we do.
Because healthy, healthy officers make healthier decisions.
Absolutely. And then that makes everybody safer,
makes everybody safer. So what else gets you excited about what you're doing and the work you're doing? What's really on the front of your radar that's like, wow, this is amazing. You're really excited about this.
Well, I think, you know, probably the first thing is seeing all of these projects that we have been working on for a few years now finally coming to fruition. Seeing that approved provider bulletin come together, the fact that we get new applications from providers every day who want to be vetted by our committee and added to that directory. So that's fantastic. More providers keep coming. More people want to get involved with supporting first responder mental health. That's super exciting. Seeing the peer support class, the peer power and peers class finally be finished and getting ready to be deployed. And us, you know, the next step there is going to be for us to create a nationwide network of supporting peer mentors. So those officers that are trained so that they can network with each other and they can lean on each other for support as well. So that's coming down the pike. And I think, you know, another cool thing is these eight special folks that I work with on my committee constantly have new ideas about things that we can do to add to the services we're already providing. And so we're looking at other things. We're looking at some family wellness programs, working with our national FOP auxiliary. We're working with, you know, we're looking at how we can work more to educate clinicians out there who want to learn more about working with law enforcement, but don't quite have the knowledge base yet. So lots of stuff still to do.
That's awesome. Well, congratulations on all that and the work you guys are doing. It's really amazing. And I'm hoping to be able to come to the summit this year or this next year. So we'll talk about that offline. So to a couple more questions. One, what do you do to take care of yourself?
That's a great question, Conrad. Well, I spend a lot of time with my husband, who is also a law enforcement officer. And it's actually kind of funny. I am home. I travel quite a bit during the year to conferences and FOP meetings and things and doing the work that we do. But during the holidays, usually I'm home, and during the summers, I'm home a lot because conferences don't happen so much during the summer. So I pack our social calendar during the summer. I'm a big concert goer. I love music. I love live music. And so I'm constantly buying tickets to concerts for us or finding some live music venue that we can go to. We have a boat that we spend time on in the summer. And so, yeah, I mean, those things. I have a garden in the summer that I do as well. Huge vegetable garden that I really love taking care of. So, you know, it's a little more challenging during the times when I'm traveling to find those times and those outlets. But what that looks like is still, you know, planning. You really have to plan sometimes your off time, if you will. And I do that. I make a conscious effort to plan things so that I, because otherwise I might not get off my computer.
You should try a cross-country bike ride some summer.
Looks like a super fun time. No, I do like traveling. And, you know, unfortunately, the past few years, all my travel has been mostly for work. You know, I did go on a nice vacation to Costa Rica last year, but I mean, you know, I what a cool thing to do, to bike across the country and see it.
It was amazing. Yeah, it was amazing. We're going to actually produce a little YouTube series on it, on kind of our whole journey. We're going to do, I forget how many episodes, 8 or 9 episodes that we're going to put together.
That's awesome.
So, yeah. So that'll be coming out probably starting, the first episode will probably drop in January sometime. So
you guys can become like the Forrest Gumps of cross country bike riding and get like a following behind you. You're not the first one who's mentioned that. Get like a following behind you. There they are. Yeah, there they are. Right.
And we get to the end, and why'd you stop? I would die.
Yeah. That would be super fun.
Yeah. So one last question. Well, actually, two last questions. Anything else that we didn't talk about that's front of mind for you?
Oh wow. Yeah, you know, I think what I want people to know is not to forget. I mean, I think most people that are going to be listening to this podcast are already affiliated with first responders in some kind of way. But if someone stumbles upon this podcast that doesn't work with first responders, that doesn't know them well, it seems like sometimes we forget that they're people with lives and like their job is not their life. You know, they have families and feelings and all these things, hobbies, and, you know, the fact that they go out and put a uniform on and have to often conceal their opinions doesn't mean they don't have opinions and don't have thoughts. So, you know, just keep that in mind and give each other a break, first responders. I mean, you know, we are the worst, sometimes the worst critics of each other. Even across, you know, we joke a lot, law enforcement jokes with fire and, you know, and even within our own professions, we do a lot of cutting up on each other, but, you know, really take care of each other, give each other a break.
Yeah, for sure. Good words of advice. So anything fun you're doing in the next month?
Yes, indeed. Next week, I'm going to South Dakota. So we have our FOP legal defense plan. Legal defense committee has a meeting in South Dakota. And I'm going to be going there, and I'm going to get to see Mount Rushmore.
Cool. That's your first time?
Yeah, first time. There's only like 7 or 8 states I haven't been to, and South Dakota's one of them. So I'm checking that one off the list.
Be sure to go to the Badlands. Badlands are amazing.
That's what I've been told.
Yeah. And Wall Drug. I mean, everybody's got to stop at Wall Drug. It's a big tourist trap, but you got to go there because you'll see signs. If you're driving across the state, you'll see signs, you know, 1,000 miles to Wall Drug and then 500 miles to Wall Drug. It's an amazing place, but it's a lot of fun. Well, Sherry, thank you so much for being on the podcast. I really appreciate it. Appreciate what you guys did for me for the film and being able to work with you guys in some way. And looking forward to seeing what are the results of your new survey coming out.
Yeah. They'll be out probably January, February, I'm thinking. Connor, and I thank you for having me on, and thank you for being such an ally of ours. And thank you, you know, for all the work you do to support all the first responders.
Well, it's my privilege, and it's my honor to do that. And so one final question, I promise. If someone wants to come to the summit, how do they do that?
Yes. So start looking for announcements about it. Probably around November sometime. The dates for it, we already know. February 18 to 20, 2024. It's in Nashville, Tennessee. Great town.
Awesome. Very good. Well, thank you, Sherry. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Conrad.
Thanks, Sherry, for your leadership and insights. And thanks to you for listening to the show. I really appreciate it. Hey, please leave a review and give it 5 stars if you think it's worth it. And subscribe to the show. Just a reminder, you can see the video of this content on our Patreon channel. I'll leave a link in the show notes where you can access that. We want others to discover this content and benefit from it as well, so please share it. And remember, you are not alone. And if you need someone to talk to and don't know where to turn to for help, dial 988. There are people standing by listening, ready to talk to you. Until next time, be well, take care of yourself and those around you, and go out and do something great in the world.